Thank you for listening to the Data Is My Science podcast, the show that makes data your passion, with your host, Dapper Data.
What's up, what's up, what's up, everybody? You are listening to the Data Is My Science podcast, the show that makes data your passion. I am your host, Dapper Data. I am back again. Okay, and we have talked about a lot of different things, but I think this is the first time we have talked about identity management. Okay, we're going to dive deep into identity management. I brought an expert on this just to talk about it. But if you don't know what that is, right, if you look at like definitions from VMware, from Google, you know, wherever it is, you know, to get a true definition of it, you know, and maybe you can correct me on this, Kevin, but it says it's also known as identity and access management. Right, ensures that authorized people and only authorized people have access to the technology resources they need to perform their job functions. And you can find it in many places. I mean, at work, you probably deal with identity access management all the time, right? In the cloud right now, you have Microsoft Azure Identity Access Management, you have AWS Identity Access Management, you have your Active Directory, right, back in the day. Well, people still use that. You have Red Hat Linux Identity Management. So it's so many different platform or tools that are out there that are using identity access management to be able to give, authorized people access to technology and resources they need to perform their job functions. So I brought a special guest on here. You know, I have to bring a guest because I don't know it all. I only know data and I barely know all that. So I have to bring a special guest on for this. His name is Kevin Dominic Corte. Thank you for being on the podcast, Kevin.
Happy to be there.
Yeah, so Kevin, Kevin dedicates himself to inspiring people to take control of their time, data, and dreams in IT, business and in life overall. He is an accomplished entrepreneurial non-executive director and IT innovation and growth strategist. Kevin's focus is to help companies adopt leading-edge cybersecurity practices and turn IT from a hindrance into an asset of every organization. He is a German native. Kevin moved over to Seattle, so he probably knows a lot about Amazon and all that stuff out there in Seattle, man. But he has he's moved over to Seattle about 2013, I think, and to take over the role of president of UniVention, right? And we'll talk about what that is as well. He is responsible for the U.S. team there and helps clients use open source identity management systems. As a startup investor, Kevin focuses on tech and fintech, all right? He's an exceptional stakeholder in management skills, nurtures strong relationships with high profile industry players and key partners. Thank you again, Kevin, for being on. Tell them a little bit about yourself, man. You know,
I think you've covered most of it. Of course, most important part, I'm a dad as well. But in my work life, I'm dealing with identities, with how people get into systems and how they go from there to whatever they want to do. Because let's be honest, no one wants to deal with a digital identity, not even IT people. We just want to work, or at least that's how we want to perceive ourselves. We don't want to be like the person, I'm entering another password.
Right. No, that's true. That's true, man. And so, you know, that's interesting because I didn't even think that, I mean, when you think about identity management, I didn't think that all those things play a part, right? You know, the passport protection, all that different stuff, you know, and even with that, man, you know, I personally hate it, right? You know, I'm like, look, just change the last digit to the another number up, man. You know, just, you know, why do they need me to do a special character plus a capital letter and a lowercase, man? What is this 12 character? You know, it's a lot, right? You know, so being in the role that you are in now at UniVention, what are you all doing there at UniVention that involves open system identity management?
So for you or for most users, it's username, password, and then something like an SMS or a YubiKey or something. For the administrator, it's getting your identity, which is your name, your last name, your email, and whatever authenticates you, so the password, the token, into your email, your podcasting system, your scheduling system, your business management system, the stuff that deals with your advertisers. And all of these want to be fed the same data, because nothing is worse than when I'm sitting here as your guest and get like, oh, scheduling software is sending you a new email because someone messed up the email address. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, this kind of data entry, you probably don't like it if you have to do it for any podcast stuff. Administrators don't like it if they have to do it even once. So we built the software that makes it automated to get the same data into multiple systems. And on the back end, that you can give your HR department just, okay, here's this thing, put in the data, and then the system takes care of making the right email address, propagating it, making sure that the right laptop is assigned or the right computer. And if you then have millions of users, millions of mailboxes, or even just 20, you really get the high paid IT people away from doing all this busy work or what they perceive as busy work. And on the other hand, for a user, it's a lot easier to go to the team assistant, could you reset my password, than to go to the, and let's play with stereotypes, the geek in his t-shirt, sweaty, who's sitting there eating pizza and doing some magical word and telling him, I need to reset my password. And you can already hear like, another one of those.
No, absolutely, man. And it's amazing, that scenario. You know, if you could tell us more about like a scenario like that, you know, because I definitely could see something like this being beneficial to big enterprises, right? You know, especially as you have all these silo like organizations, right? You know, then you're really creating this central way of being able to do identity management. Is that what Univention is doing?
Yes, centralizing it, and then, but yeah, as I said, the other part is delegating out tasks. If you want a scenario, we have a number of dermatology offices in a like clinic consortium in Pennsylvania, like 28 offices and 3 IT people running it. So you can imagine if they're all over a relatively big state, they can't drive. Okay, let's go to the IT central IT people. So for them, it's really, okay, each office, there's someone who can reset the password. And at the same time, all the data gets fed into that central system, which then controls, okay, here are the patient data. Are you really the doctor for that? Or are you someone who's trying to access millions of records at the same time?
Yeah, yeah. So does that play a big part in cybersecurity, you know, being able to protect?
Yes. For once, you can do the analysis over your data if you have a centralized system. Otherwise, if I just have an independent email system and independent CRM system, most of us are lazy and will use the same password. So I can probe the password here. And if that locks me out after 10 times, I can go here to my email system, probe that 10 more times. Or if someone uses the same pattern, just changes the number. We all have heard about ChatGPT, which is great for building language models. So if I have 6 or 7 data breaches, I can grab the passwords from them, put them in, and then language models are great for finding these patterns and saying, oh, here are the 10 digits you should change in the end.
Everything else is the same.
And your digit is a simple example.
No, that's amazing, man. You know, all right, now I got to go do some changes to my password. No, man, so the role that you play with identity access management is amazing, right? And that's something that a lot of people don't talk about. It's almost like they skip past the importance of it, right? Because it's just supposed to be there. It's supposed to exist. right? You know,
it's supposed to work, and the better it works, the less you see of it.
Yeah. Nobody talks about it, right? It's like, all right, I got my password. I'm good to go. They don't care. Oh, I need to reset. Just somebody do it. You know, they don't care about how the process is seamless in the background. From an admin standpoint, it's like, man, make things more efficient. Please help the admin out, right? Because I could also see a lot of admins saying, man, are you trying to take my job now? Because it does help me out, you know, to be very pretty busy, right?
It's very often we have a partner company, especially for smaller clients, where we hear, oh, but if I make it more efficient, are you taking my job? And our standard replies, are you honestly telling me your client has no other IT worries than to have you reset passwords for them? And true, there's always a project which just gets pushed back because of time or budget limitations.
Yeah. But it gives the IT admin an excuse to kind of be lazy a little bit, right? Eat their pizza and just chill out, you know, and say, man, look, I have to push this very important project back because I had to change 10 passwords a day and it was just ridiculous, you know? So analytics, right? I like to tie analytics, data science, those type of things into what I'm talking about, right? Because I do believe that it plays a huge role in every aspect, right? You know, as people are starting to use data for everything. And I want to talk about the role of analytics in identity and access management, all right? I mean, using analytics like turns your system into more than just an identity access management solution. It raises it to a new level now, you know, and these analytics, they analyze the identity and the access data using these advanced analytic tools that are out there, right, to perform functions. Now you're thinking about data mining, right? Statistical analysis, data visualization, you know, being able to visualize and do reports on the identity access management platform that you have. I'm sure you all are able to provide that now and even do predictive analytics on some things, you know. Can you talk a little bit about that, the role that analytics is playing?
Depends on the end, of course, what you want to see. And I think that's the big thing about analytics, gives you often a visual representation, but also a kind of condensed, focused representation. So in the most basic case, you have the reports out, okay, who is active at what time, who is using tools, who has access to what software. Mm-hmm. And that in turn then helps you, okay, if no one is using that, or if really no one is logging into it, is it a tool we need? Is it data we store, data we could get rid of, data which right now is just a target, and if we get rid of it, we don't lose anything. But you can also make kind of these predictive works which look at the question, is that really a person working, or is that someone grabbing data? So you might have someone have lost access or have spoofed access, and if a person comes in first thing in the morning, checks their email, so you see in login from the mail server. Next thing, they check the chat log, so you see, okay, that software comes up. Then they download 20 files to the hard disk, what they work on that day. If they suddenly go in, okay, I'm starting to see 40 files, and then the thing starts. There's something wrong there. Mm-hmm. Either that person really upped his work schedule, or someone else got access there and is really using that access to grab data. And often it's not just one, because despite working from home, most companies are congregated around certain areas. So if my local grocery store has a data breach in their system, it's likely that all my coworkers are affected, because we are congregated in the same place, go to the same grocery stores, and might all use the same username or the same email address there. Mm-hmm. The same pattern of email address. Hopefully they don't use mine.
Yeah.
And thus I might see attacks targeting very specific companies because just someone got into a business in that area. And this, it's really these patterns. Okay, did five people change their habits? And then it's really something, okay, we have to look into that. What connects them, what brings them in? And that's in the analytics where pattern recognition and really the old school machine learning, which is not write me my next article, getting in and can do this analytics and especially find patterns which we wouldn't see or which might be so subconscious for us that they aren't there.
Yeah. And the patterns are, that's probably the most important thing. And it's cool because, well, what's cool is the tool that you all have, right? You know, what you all have built, it sort of allows you to have a way to collect more data to identify more patterns, in a sense, if you're looking at some type of security part of it, because like you have better insight, right? In sort of a central location, the more data, the better insights you have, you know, and with access management, it just seems like that's the perfect tool to be able to do something like some good insights on the reporting that you have, right? You know, because now you're taking the reporting that you got from your IAM solution and applying actionable insight in order not only see, I guess, these relationships more clearly, but to also see which of these are putting you most at risk, right?
It's not just the amount of data, because you might be swamped by data otherwise, but it's especially the quality and the uniformity, which I think the big selling point. Because there's nothing stopping me taking the data from 50 different systems, but then I have data from 50 different systems, which looks different, which might not tell the same story, and which I need them to do a pre-processing over to get them into the same format, into the same
preparing the data. State.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Versus if you have it all integrated, okay, here's something I can act on right now. I don't need to wait till the pre-processing is done. I can even stop an attack or recognize it while it's going on.
Yeah, because that's going to be the most important part, cleaning it, you know, the preparation of the data. That's like 80, 90% of it. And then once you get those insights to reporting, it's easy, right? Now you can put it together. Everything is pretty smooth in itself during the time, you know. And so even when you're going like one layer down, like there's still too many relationships to understand. So you have to weed that out, right? You may have a list of accounts with privileged access or a list of groups, and what they should have access to. However, you will not be able to really see exactly what they have access to or see how the accounts are acting, especially if the groups are nested within each other, right? Like in identity access management. So it can get real tricky in there, I'm sure. Do you find that being the case?
It's often the case that it's either very well designed or that it's grown. If it's very well designed, nested groups or some or similar constructs don't present an obstacle because you can explode it out and see, okay, that are the members who are somewhere there. Stuff that's grown is much more of an issue because you might have, okay, group structure A comes from this old system. And then they bought in a company which has three times nested groups for locations, functions, and then maybe even the office someone sat in at the time the company was bought in. And then they bought in another company who didn't have anything but a flat structure of roles. So this kind of mished together scenario, that's really where the challenges come, because you suddenly have someone in a role, someone in an office, and someone who's sorted by a function. And then you need to find out, okay, do they have the same access rights, or are they actually in different levels on different rights there? And on the analytics part, are they all doing what they should do, or is there someone who's misbehaving?
Right. Then you have orphaned and abandoned accounts. I mean, it just seems like it could get real crazy out there, right? You know, higher privileges, you know, than you should, you know. So do you go into environments with the company, and would you rather go into an environment and it's starting all green? I'm sure you would, versus an environment that has already created, I guess, their own chaotic situation and stuff.
I think it's hard to say which one's more fun. I think if you have someone where the admin is green, it's easier to go in a green system and teach them and build it up from scratch. If you have someone who's willing to listen and willing to learn and has lots of insights into the system, then going into a chaotic situation and starting the process of cleaning it up has its own charm and kind of its own challenges. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the worst part is if you have a grown system, a green guy, and someone coming in from the outside, who's like, what is going on here?
Or if you have somebody that's like that has a grown system and, you know, it's still growing, of course, and the admin is like stubborn in their ways and they think they know everything, right? They're not open to new ideas.
It's no matter whether you're in technology, in sales, or in podcasting, I think the worst person is always the one who says, that's how we've always done it. That's how we'll do it until the day I die.
No, Kevin, man. Hey, look, Kevin, this has been great. I would like to end with what I call a dope nugget and gem. What I've learned today so far is that identity access management systems, right, are critical for cybersecurity, right? Because we pointed that out and it didn't really hit me until we started having a conversation like, oh, wow, you know, cybersecurity plays this big role in this, right? And it's important for that cybersecurity function that organizes all sizes of privileged access management across the board, right? It boosts security and provides greater control of user access to your system and all that good stuff. And this really helps organizations out there mitigate those data breaches, like you mentioned, right? One that's like at Amazon or whatever it is, and identity theft as well. Is there anything that you want to leave the audience with?
I think coming back full circle to the beginning of logging into your account, if you log in more than once a day, something's wrong with your identity system.
Oh my goodness. Oh man, I didn't think about that. And that's huge companies right there, because I've been in some companies where, I mean, shoot, I'm with a company right now. I'm pretty sure I've logged in more than once. You know, you log in once. Would you recommend at least logging? But should I log in? Okay, so you just dropped a huge nugget right there, right? Because I really wanted to understand what I should be doing right now. So does that mean that I should, if I say I log in today, should I be logged out by 12 o'clock tonight and then be able to log in tomorrow? Or should I be able to stay logged in for 30 days? Like, you know, you click the box that says stay logged in for 30 days.
So the system should log you out whenever you leave the computer. That's the thing. Okay. If you go to the bathroom or if you go to lunch, that's when you should log out. You should log in into the computer again, but you shouldn't be required to log into email accounts, CRMs, or all of these systems, because the more often you enter it, first of all, the more time gets wasted on it, and the shorter your password gets, because the more annoyed you get with the process.
Oh, yeah, you're right. The client, the person on the other end, is going to say, screw this. I don't want to make a complex password. I'm going to make it very, very easy, just because I'm tired of logging into my systems all the time, right? You know, that single sign-on is key for multiple areas. So, okay. Yeah, well, you know what kills me? I'll tell you what kills me, Kevin, is when I have to go look at my phone after I've logged into my laptop, right? And because it says, you know, check the PIN on your phone, into an application, not on my laptop, but an application that is on my system, right? Somewhere in Microsoft, maybe whether it's my email or OneDrive or something. And then it's like, all right, you know, now you have to go to your phone and check your pin, and my phone is like upstairs, right? I'm like, oh man, now I got to go upstairs. You know, that is a pain though. I'll tell you that. How do you fix that, man? You got to fix that.
I would say, sorry, you have to do multi-factor once, because password is just too easy otherwise, but it shouldn't be 20 times a day or whenever you do a new task. I think right. that's for acceptance is also, it's critical that, okay, you have it once and then you're in the system.
Yeah. It's like you really have to just meet me as a customer halfway or as a client halfway, you know. Don't make it too hard on me, man, painful. But all right, time to have a little bit of fun. All right, you ready? I like to play this game called Overrated, Underrated, Kevin. And basically, I like to ask the guests. And I actually got this game from a motivational speaker that I follow. His name is Gary Vee. But I play this game, right? And it's mainly for the guests to know that we're not always geeking it out. I mean, we do it probably 90% of the time, but the other 10%, we do have an opinion about everything else, right? You just ask us, we have an opinion about it while we're geeking it out, so it's okay. But this game, I ask you a series of topics, throw them out there, about 7 topics. You get to decide whether you think it's overrated, underrated, or right where it needs to be. Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right, roller coasters.
Underrated.
Underrated, you love them?
I love them.
Oh man, nice, man. You know, I agree. I love them. I haven't rode a roller coaster in a while, but I mean, that's one thing that my kids, for some reason, they don't really like it as much, man. But I love it, man. You know, so yeah.
It's exactly the other way around for me. I was like, oh, I hate waiting in line. I'm not going until my kids were like old enough to. We really want to.
Oh, nice, man. So you got the daredevils right there. That's awesome. All right. Amazon.
Overrated.
Oh, really? You're in Seattle, man. You know, you better stay in the house for a little bit, man. I don't know. Be careful.
I'm in Seattle. We have a lot of great local businesses and small businesses which get the stuff to you cheaper, get the stuff to you better, and where you actually get advice of what's the best idea to buy and not just have to click on, okay, here are 5,000 reviews. How many of them are fake?
All right. I guess when you start living in that area, you get to see those type of things. For me, man, Amazon is, it like changed my life, man. If I don't have an Amazon package in my house, you know, every other day, I'm like, I'm what's going on, man? What's going on with my family? Somebody didn't order Amazon. What's going on? You know, so it seems like I would say as a collective, right? You know, you got Audible books, you got all that stuff. I'm a huge Amazon fan. I have about 3 or 4 Alexas, like Amazon Echoes. I got one for the kids in the room. It's just Amazon out, man. You know, and I get upset when somebody says, okay, Google. I'm like, what? Okay, Google? We got Alexa. What are you talking about? Okay, Google.
I'm saying, hey, spyware.
I know. All right. The TV, the television.
Overrated.
Overrated. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that, man. You know. I it distracts me, man. It distracts me so much. Yeah.
I was just collecting dust and I probably have to clean it before using it.
Do the kids watch it a lot? I mean, they don't get outside these days. Do your kids watch TV a lot or are they outside?
They are far too active to sit down, especially our 3-year-old. Uh-huh. You try to, come on, let's watch TV. It's like, okay, 5 minutes later, let's run and get a toy too.
Yeah. All right. I don't know if you've been here before, but Pike Place Market.
Overrated.
Overrated? Overrated?
It's a tourist trap by now.
Oh, okay. So I don't know if you want to explain to the audience what Pike Place Market is.
So Pike Place Market is originally the food market in Seattle, but now it's the old buildings with a gum wall where people stick gum on, and all these quirky little shops which sell honestly stuff that you can get three streets over for half the price. You're on the top, still have food, but it's the same. There's the food which people buy to show off that they've been in Pike Place Market, and where people buy the huge fishes because the fish vendor throws them back and forth for scaling or for packaging. So it's really just more show where you go if you have guests over than really place where you buy
something. So you won't see too many people that live in Seattle constantly going to Pike Place Market.
Not really anymore.
Okay. All right, Starbucks.
Now you have me on the Seattle, probably. Especially thankfully that my wife is not here. I have to say overrated.
Oh, she's going to say underrated?
She is. She's the coffee drinker in the family. I don't know whether she likes Starbucks or whichever. I'm the tea drinker. So yeah. Anything related to coffee, sorry, that's the wrong person for that.
Yeah, that's me too. I'm definitely the tea drinker, man. I love tea, you know. But the coffee, I tasted my dad's coffee one time when I was very little. And he did just plain black and white coffee, right? And it was just like so nasty. I just tasted it. And I actually spit it out because it was too hot. And it traumatized me for the rest of my life. I said, I don't ever want coffee again. You know, I was like 8 years old. And he said, I told you not to try it. I told you not to touch my stuff. You know?
Then Starbucks might be the right place for you. You get these more soft drink likes caramel macchiato latte.
Yeah. Maybe. All right. Two more. The Space Needle.
Given that I have kids who love them, underrated. But that's the only reason.
Well, if you didn't have kids, you probably would think it's overrated. Is it more of like a kid's attraction?
I think it's the combination of being something which you don't see everywhere and the excitement of going up and looking down on everything. That's probably what makes it exciting for kids and for people who were there the first time. If you live there, then there are so many more nice places to visit around. Plus, to be honest, if you want a good look over Seattle, there are some cafes which are on the top floors of the skyscrapers, which you have to buy a $3 coffee instead of a $40 ticket per person.
Oh, man. All right, last one, hiking.
Underrated.
Oh, man. Is there a lot of hiking going on in Seattle?
You're in the perfect place here for it. You can be in the mountains and sediments or on the beach and walk along the Olympic Peninsula after an hour. So it's definitely a good way to keep fit, to be outside and honestly save a bit of money instead of going to the Space Needle or to Pike Place Market.
No, I definitely want to start doing some things like that. Keep the kids active, you know, doing some hiking or something. You know, I did it here in the area around the Maryland area where I'm at. I've done it with my friends, my buddies, but I just got out of it after a while, right? I just go to the gym for the exercise, but I think that it'll be great. Get outdoors, right? You know, get the kids away from the TV, the video games and stuff, and just go hiking, right? And be one with nature.
Fresh air, a place where there's no cell reception.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, you would know, right? Your phone was probably blowing up all the freaking time, you know, being in the role you're in, even at the company, you know. So being able to get away sometime for like a day or two or week, you know, is probably the best thing.
That's why you have Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, that's true. Well, look, Kevin, man, it has been a pleasure. I have loved this podcast, you know, and I'm sure the audience is going to love it too. Audience, thank you for listening to Data is My Science podcast, a show to make data your passion. I am your host, Dapper Data. Where can they reach you at, Kevin? And is there anything that you're promoting with the company right now?
I think best way to reach out to me is LinkedIn. It's really the only place where I'm constantly active on. Otherwise, if you go to univention.com, you can find the address. And if you send me a postcard, that's a lot better protected than an email or anything else.
Yeah. Okay. And look, and thank you for that, Kevin. And audience, you know, you can reach me at Mr. Dapper Data on any one of the social media platforms. I'm definitely more active on LinkedIn, and I'm a watcher kind of on Twitter. So you won't see me tweet and do rants and stuff like that or anything. I'm just watching other people do that. But I'm on IG and I'm on Facebook as well. So just ping me there. And definitely subscribe to the Data is My Science podcast and on YouTube, right, at www.mrdapperdata.com. Also go there to my website and check out my book, Dapper Book, there. All right. Thank you all. Love you. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Data is My Science podcast, the show that makes data your passion, with your host, Dapper Data.